This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Mitt Romney is usually pretty composed in public. It's part of his persona. Even when he was working at State Fair as a candidate, his hair was just so, his shirt always pressed. He was seen as straight-laced, in control. But on Wednesday, on the floor of the Senate, as he explained his decision to convict Donald Trump on one count of the two impeachment charges, Romney broke more than once. Even though he managed to regroup, you could tell he was nervous. Those reporters who talked to him and his fellow lawmakers mentioned how he hadn't been sleeping, that it was clear he was really weighing this decision. And it came through when he spoke.
The allegations made in the articles of impeachment are very serious. As a senator juror, I swore an oath before God to exercise impartial justice. I am profoundly religious. My faith is at the heart of who I am. I take an oath before God as enormously consequential. I knew from the outset that being tasked with judging the president, the leader of my own party, would be the most difficult decision I have ever faced. I was not wrong.
In the speech, Romney responded to the legal questions at stake, but what most will probably remember is the way he invoked his sense of duty, the importance of an oath, and how all of that bore on his own sense of personal conscience.
But my promise before God to apply impartial justice required that I put my personal feelings and political biases aside. Were I to ignore the evidence that has been presented and disregard what I believe my oath and the Constitution demands of me for the sake of a partisan end, it would, I fear, expose my character to history's rebuke and the censure of my own conscience.
Romney has made it clear he knows there will be consequences for that decision. And we figured today it might be worth discussing that, the times when a person's personal conscience conflicts with political realities. Joining us on the program is Thomas Burr. He is the Washington bureau chief of the Salt Lake Tribune. He joins us today from the NPR studios in Washington, D.C. And Thomas Burr, welcome to you. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Good morning.
Joining him there is McKay Coppins. He's a staff writer at The Atlantic. His book, The Wilderness, about the future of the Republican Party, is now available in paperback. And McKay Coppins, welcome to you.
Hi.
We also have with us David Magleby. He's a professor emeritus of political science at Brigham Young University. He's joining us from the studios of BYU Radio in Provo. And Professor Magleby, welcome to you.
Good to be here.
I want to begin, I guess, just broadly, all of you, react to the decision made by Senator Romney. How consequential is something like this? McKay Coppins, why don't you begin?
You know, I had spent a lot of time with him last year with the senator for a profile I was working on. And the thing that I came away with at the time was that he was really thinking of his service in the Senate as a kind of legacy capping moment. He had his long business career. He had had a political career. And he seemed more attuned to the historical significance of what was happening in Washington than a lot of his colleagues, frankly. And I could tell that he was sort of thinking about what his role would be at this moment. And so the decision to take this vote, which, I mean, there are going to be a lot of cynical takes on this. I will just say this is not in his political self-interest.
Yeah.
It's just not.
Yeah.
I mean, it's going to make him a pariah on most of the right. He is going to have a very difficult time advancing his legislative agenda back in his home state. I'm sure our other guests can speak to this, but I don't think, you know, even in Utah, which is more divided on Trump than a lot of other red states, I think that this is going to probably hurt him with some voters. But this is why I believe him when he says that this was an act of conscience, because looking at it any which way, it just does not make political sense.
Tommy Burr, what do you think?
You know, I agree with McKay on that. And I think it was fascinating, really, in the end of the day, Romney's vote wasn't going to matter. They were never going to get to 67 votes to remove the president. He could have easily, you know, voted with the rest of the Republicans, and no one really would have batted an eye. His vote mattered to him, though, and I think your conversation with him, my conversation with him, we really saw that he wasn't just going to toe the party line just because it was the easy thing to do. In fact, there's no upside to him making this vote other than he felt it was the right thing to do. There's a lot of downsides, the attacks he's getting from the president, his supporters, the president's family. The Utah legislature is talking about censuring him right now. So there really was no reason to do this other than he felt a deep, deep reason in his soul to do so.
David Magowy, put this in historical context. Is this a big deal? That way?
Oh, it's a big deal. Romney elevated conscience over partisanship, and we're in a period of acute polarization in our politics, and it's very consequential what he did, and therefore I think it's going to be ongoing as part of his contribution to American politics, because it denies President Trump and others in the Republican Party the claim that it was strictly partisan. Mm-hmm. So in the lead up to this program, there was an NPR story where they reported the vote on the abuse of power charge and said all Democrats and one Republican. And that one Republican vote is going to be in every story. Mm-hmm. It's going to be in every history book. Because it is so atypical. It was not expected in a sense. He could have easily gone the other way, and he didn't.
Yeah. Thomas and McKay, were you both surprised that he was so willing to talk to you? He's been reticent in the past, but he seemed willing to talk about this. Did that surprise you?
This is Tommy. I think there was I think he really wanted people to understand why he came to it and how he came to his vote. I don't think this is something he just – his floor speech was pretty emotional and very from the heart too. But I think he – McKay's covered him for a long time. I have too. Some of the other reporters he talked to know him very well. And he really wanted to explain to voters. He wanted them to think this wasn't, just a one-off, that he hates the president or something. He wanted to show and really go through, tick through the fact he's not sleeping, how he approached it, what he knows about the repercussions that are going to come. And I yield to McKay now, but I think he really wanted to get somebody to write and people to write the full story of why he came to his decision.
Yeah, I would also say that one thing I was actually really surprised about when I sat down with him, the day before, the afternoon before he gave this speech. And like Tommy, the conversation was embargoed. We couldn't report on it until he spoke. But as we were talking, I was actually struck by the degree to which he was willing to place this in the context of his personal faith.
Yeah.
And as somebody who has covered his presidential campaign, his political career for nearly a decade, and as also somebody who shares his faith, I'm a member of the same church as him, I can tell you how rare that is. In 2012, I would write stories about the kind of Latter-day Saint angle.
We talked to you about this.
Talked about this. Yeah. He didn't want to. He had decided that as a matter of political strategy, it was not wise to bring up Mormonism on the campaign trail for all kinds of reasons. And so when I would write these stories, his campaign would kind of be irritated with me. And they would always push back and, why is this matter? Why are you writing about this so much? And at the time, I would defend it and say, because everything I know, everything I understand about Mitt Romney, this is at the center of his character. This is at the center of who he is. And just because he doesn't want to talk about it on the campaign trail doesn't make that not so. And I feel like I was vindicated in that when we finally sat down and he was open about it. I didn't have to press him on the faith stuff. He right from the beginning volunteered, I took an oath to God. This is how I'm thinking. He quoted two different hymns to me. He quoted a verse of scripture it was his father's favorite verse of scripture in Doctrine and Covenants.
Say that. Mention that scripture. I thought this was interesting because it does
not put you on the spot.
You're not going to put me on the spot here because I don't know that I have quite memories.
Sorry. Yeah, I didn't mean for you to quote it. Give me the essence of what he was saying.
But it was the gist was, I'm going to paraphrase here. Search diligently, be believing. believing, pray always, and all things shall come together for your good. And he said that that verse was kind of echoing in his ear as he was going through the Senate trial. And he kept thinking that, you know, he told me he had to search diligently. He had to go through a real analysis, a real process of searching for what the truth was in this trial. And that he also quoted to me, this didn't make it into my piece, but he quoted to me Mark Twain in Huck Finn saying, "I cannot pray a lie." Saying that, you know, I at the end of the day, I just felt like I couldn't face God by doing something that I knew was wrong.
David Magleby, what about that? What about the fact that we're now hearing from, seem to be now hearing from Mitt Romney about his faith? He seems to be leaning into his Mormonism, leaning into the ideas of oaths and God and personal private conscience.
Well, I think his speech indicates that he takes that very seriously. As your listeners know, likely know, the senators take a separate oath when they convene the impeachment trial in the Senate, and it has the language of deity in the oath. They take an oath of office when they're elected, but this is a separate new oath, and I think that was on Romney's mind. He also knew from his personal experience that it was likely that Trump would attack him for religious reasons. I mean, that had happened in the 2016 election when Trump criticized him before the Utah caucuses, saying he wasn't sure Mitt was even a very good Mormon. But then to hear today that Trump has tweeted that Romney used religion as a crutch means I think he may have anticipated that religion was going to come into it one way or another. And he was unabashed, as Tommy and McKay have indicated, in not holding back from his own articulation of that being related to his vote. It was a bold statement.
Yeah. I want to play a moment from the New York Times produces a radio program that we air called The Daily. It's also a podcast people may be familiar with. And there was a Mark Leibovich of the New York Times also had the opportunity, along with Tommy, not together, but they also, Mitt Romney also spoke with him as well. And the host of the program, Michael Barbaro, was talking to Leibovich about this conversation that he had with Mitt Romney. And there's an interesting insight in here I wanted to ask you all about. Barbaro asks him why he would be willing to sit down and talk with reporters about this. And Leibovich says something I found interesting about all of that.
Well, I mean, one thing I've always been interested in with Mitt Romney is that he has always been, not in a self-absorbed way, but he's always been very aware of his own political narrative. He has been aware of how he was viewed maybe as a political opportunist, him maybe doing things out of expediency rather than principle. And I think ultimately one of the things that this Senate chapter has done for him in his career is it has enabled him to maybe rewrite the ending, maybe recast himself as someone who did feel as if he was doing the right thing at the expense of whatever the expedient decision at the moment would have been.
Does any of that weigh on you? You're in your 70s now. This is probably your last job. You know, maybe this is an important enough issue that I could really take a stand. And just do the right thing. I mean, do you ever think about these decisions in light of other decisions you have made when you had more politically to lose?
You know, I haven't given the full analysis to my whole political history that I will with time, particularly, I'm sure, in retirement. You know, my guess is that I was influenced in some cases by political benefit.
Right.
And I regret that.
Tommy and McKay, what do you make of that? Did he talk to you about that as well? I mean, this idea of somehow recasting some of the decisions he had made in the past. What do you think about that?
Yeah, so this is a subject that I talked to him kind of about off and on for the last year or so, and then in this context again. You know, when you ask him about his place in history and how he'll be remembered, he's, you know, pretty modest. And I think he even said this in his speech, you know, we're all footnotes in history. Yeah. I'm not going to be remembered as this great historical figure. But then when you really press him to think about that, he brings up his father And his father, George Romney, was, of course, a Republican governor who famously broke with his party over a number of issues, largely around civil rights, mm-hmm. and was kind of remembered that way. And it always struck me that Mitt Romney felt like his father was remembered as this kind of man of conscience and principle who had placed his own ideals over political interests and party. And I think on some level, I'm speculating here, but this is informed speculation. Yeah. On some level, I think he always wanted to live up to that example and maybe kind of realized that at times he had been acting out of careerism or opportunism and hadn't quite lived up to that example. So I have to believe that this decision was shaped in part by his father's example and his desire to kind of continue that legacy.
Tommy, what do you think?
You know, I would add that too. I would agree with that. Romney has always looked up to his father. He talks about his father, a lot in making decisions. And he really he also, I think it came down to the part where he had nothing to lose. In this situation, he mentioned he's 72 years old. He's done the two runs for president. That didn't work out. But now he's a senator and he's really looking more as like, you know, I'm going to do the right thing. And as McCabe pointed out, he was pulled in different directions in 2008 and 2012. And this time there is no for him. Why not? Because we're not sure if he's going to run for re-election in 2024. That's 5 years away. So who knows? Not 5 years, but there's time years away from when he actually has to decide whether he's going to run again. So at the moment, why not vote his conscience?
Is this courage? Like, can you objectively say this was an act of courage?
I feel comfortable saying that. You know, I thought about this a lot. I talked to him. I wrote the piece. He gave the speech. There was this like 24-hour period where I barely had time to kind of pause and really think about what this meant. And, you know, you started to see immediately after the speech the kind of cynical analysis of what he was doing. Yeah. There were a lot of conservatives who said, oh, he just wants to be kind of feted by the mainstream media and the left. And, there were even people speculating that he was positioning himself for another presidential run, which, by the way, I asked him about and it caused him to laugh hysterically right. at the absurdity of
he's
it.
He's done that twice.
He very definitively said that was not in the cards for him. But, as I kind of I tried to put on my cynical reporter hat and think through this, and I just I couldn't come up with a reason for him to do this that was not related to conscience and courage. I think that, you know, it is true that he is getting some very, you know, nice coverage in the mainstream media. At the same time, he's getting just torn apart by the conservative media and on Fox News every night and conservative talk radio. And, you know, it's easy for, I think, probably some of the listeners of this show to dismiss all that stuff. But you have to remember, Mitt Romney has been a Republican for a long time. Mm-hmm. And conservative media, Republican circles, this stuff matters to him. He has a lot of friends and people he respects and admires who vehemently disagree with this decision. And so this is not an easy move for him, given all the blowback that he's getting.
Can I add it? This is very fascinating. This morning, Governor Gary Herbert is in D.C. For an event, and I grabbed him afterwards, and I wasn't sure what he was going to say, but he hasn't talked about Senator Romney at all.
Yeah.
And I asked Governor Herbert, and he said, he said I would have not voted the same way, but how can you fault somebody for voting, you know, their conscience? How can you, you know, criticize somebody for voting that the way they feel like their moral compass is sending him? Of course, Herbert's not running for re-election, but he did not have the same kind of words that other elected officials in Utah have had about Senator Romney.
Doug, I'd like to weigh in on this quickly.
I
think it was courageous for three reasons. One, in the age of Trump, anybody who crosses him is excoriated over and over again. And news reporting today indicates that we haven't seen our last tweet from the president about Romney. Mm-hmm. And moreover, the president's son, who is a very visible spokesperson, has spoken some obscenities regarding Utah's junior senator, Senator Romney. So in the age of Trump, anybody who crosses him has to know that there's going to be a vicious and Romney said as much in his statement. Second, partisan polarization is such now that we've really sorted into tribes, and it's increasingly hard for anybody to not vote with the party. And that's a change in American politics. It hasn't always been that way. And I think it was courageous for him to do so and is seen, I think, by some more neutral observers as maybe a healthy step in a move towards compromise and accommodation and getting beyond the kind of nasty polarized politics we have. And then third, as McKay just said, social media, especially Fox News, is going to amplify the anti-Romney messages, and he knows that, and he was willing to endure that, which will be difficult for the reasons Tommy and McKay have indicated.
It's David McElby, Professor Emeritus of Political Science at Brigham Young University. We also have with us Thomas Burr of the Salt Lake Tribune and McKay Coppins of The Atlantic. We'll take a break and come back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West.
With KUER's mobile app, you can listen to our live programming stream, enjoy podcasts like Radio West and Preach, browse local news, and access our 24/7 streams of BBC World Service and classical music. You can also use the new Station Finder tool to locate the KUER radio frequency that's closest to you. And if you have CarPlay in your vehicle, our app is now compatible. The KUER mobile app is available for iPhone and Android wherever you get your apps.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're talking about Senator Mitt Romney's vote this week to convict Donald Trump on one count of the impeachment charges. He broke ranks, he made history, and he said he understood the consequences. Senator Romney invoked his own conscience in doing all of this. So what does that tell us about his decision and the way he's thinking about his time in public life? We have with us David McElby, Professor Emeritus of Political Science at Brigham Young University. We also have Thomas Burr, the Salt Lake Tribune's Washington Bureau Chief, and McKay Coppins, staff writer for The Atlantic. They're joining us from NPR in Washington. So let's be more particular about what we mean by consequences here. So I guess let's start nationally. Well, no, let's start personally. I don't know if there's a cafeteria that you go to, and he'll have to be eating alone now. But what are the kind of personal consequences? You know, like, are they shunning him? Are they not talking to him? Are they screaming at him? Like, how does that work?
Well, you know, here's one thing I will say. In the immediate wake of the vote, we actually saw a fair number of Republican senators come out and not necessarily defend Mitt Romney, but say that they believed he was sincere and understood it. Mitch McConnell, Senate Majority Leader, was asked how long Mitt Romney will be in the doghouse.
That was my question.
Oh, that was you. Oh, there you go. Well, why don't you say what he said?
No, that was great because I was really looking for this quote and he just kind of said it back. But Mitch McConnell's doing this news conference and I said, Mr. Leader, how long is Senator Romney going to be in the doghouse? And his response was, we don't have any doghouses around here. That the next vote is the vote that really matters. So,
but come on, is it true they don't have any doghouses?
Well, this is what I'll say. So all of that said, while I do think that he had the respect of some of his colleagues, and I think that to a certain extent he's people understand where he's coming from. It's going to make life difficult for him, at least for the next year and possibly for the rest of his term, because the White House is apoplectic about this vote. They you have to understand from the president's point of view and his allies' point of view, he was coasting into a big victory here. The acquittal was certain. They thought leading into the day that the vote happened that they were actually going to get complete uniformity on uniform Republican unity and probably some moderate Democrats breaking ranks to vote against the conviction. Instead, you had Democrats all vote for conviction. administration and you had one Republican, and it kind of messed with the narrative for the White House. So all of which is to say, Mitt Romney is somebody who did not come to Washington just to cast one historic vote. You know, he has told me about how he has a list on his iPad that runs up to at least 60 items of big legislative things that he wants to tackle, things from immigration reform to addressing climate change to compensation for college athletes to deficit reduction, balancing the budget. All of these things matter to him. He is an ideological Republican, and he wants to accomplish these things. And it's going to be very, very difficult for him to find Republican legislative partners in the near term, because nobody wants to get on the wrong side of Trump. The White House is not going to lend its backing, at least in the near term, to anything Mitt Romney wants to do. That could change eventually, but it's going to make life difficult for him in the Senate for a little while, at least.
Doug, I was going to say, if he has to eat alone in the cafeteria, he'll be having BYU creamery chocolate milk, as
hot
he
dogs.
Did on the
hot
Senate floor.
And
he had to know that that was a breach of the rules, but it was his way to make a statement.
Was that guerrilla marketing for BYU creamery?
Well, you know, I have friends who visit our campus and swear by our ice cream, but now chocolate milk is high on their list to try as well. I think one reason this story is going to last, as was just indicated, for at least a year, is because there will be sound bites out of his floor speech that will be used in ads against vulnerable Republicans, Gardner, McSally, Collins, and Tillis. And they'll be asked by reporters about some of the specifics, appalling abuse of the public trust. That's going to be in the ad. And it's going to be Romney saying it. And as a former presidential candidate, he's campaigned in Arizona and North Carolina and Colorado, where these vulnerable senators have to run.
And Maine.
And it's going to and Maine, of course. And it's going to force them to have to distinguish why they don't think this was an appalling abuse of public trust, a violation of fundamental values. The terms he used in the floor speech, as I listened to them, were sound bites that are going to be part of ads all the way through November of this year. And so his position and the way he articulated it is going to have national implications in Senate elections, and I believe will become part of Utah's 2020 election as well.
I was talking to one of my colleagues about this and saying that for those vulnerable Republicans, Mitt Romney is kind of like the kid in class who ruins the curve, right? he has taken this kind of courageous, principled stand, and now it makes it really hard for all the other ones who have said, yes, this was an abuse of power, this was bad, but I'm not going to vote to convict. It makes it a lot harder for them to kind of make that explanation.
Well, it's a good segue into how this may play in Utah and the consequences here. So, how does the senior senator, Senator Lee, how does he justify his vote? How do the Republican congressmen who in the House, how are they explaining their votes related to all of this? What kind of bind does that put them in, or does it?
Yeah, this is Tommy. I think you know, clearly Senator Lee came into the impeachment trial in a much different mindset than Mitt Romney. Romney was saying how he was going to have an open mind. He was going to be an impartial juror. He took his role very seriously on looking at the evidence and listening to the White House defense. And Mike Lee came into this saying, one, he didn't believe that senators were impartial, that there's obviously politics involved, that he believed the president was going to be vindicated. He was going to have a really big win at the end, and that it was going to embarrass Democrats. And then Mike Lee was at the White House yesterday, you know, reveling in the president's celebratory mood that he was in, and thanking everyone in the crowd. Mike Lee obviously has a lot of love from this White House that Romney's not going to see until there's somebody else in the White House. At the end of the day, the congressmen have made their choice back when they voted in December. The one person this may help is Ben McAdams in Utah, the Democrat who really, you know, he voted for both counts on the impeachment in the House vote. And now he can say, well, yes, I did, but so did, you know, Mitt Romney agreed with one of those. It helps the Democrat who's, you know, Ben's always going to be, Congressman McAdams is always going to be in a vulnerable situation. And now he can count on that for, he can run those ads ads with Mitt Romney saying those things too. Mm.
David Magleby, give us the Utah angle here.
I agree with Tommy's perspective on McAdams. I think that may be the most consequential Utah politics angle. And you're going to hear, I think, clips in pro-McAdams ads. And I think for undecideds, the sort of in the middle voters in Utah who are positively inclined towards Romney and could come over to vote for McAdams, enough of them did last time to narrowly elect him. This could really help him. And so I think he is clearly benefited, and not only by Romney's vote, but by the way he articulated the vote. And the more that Romney is demonized, the more those voters, not the pure Trump supporters in Utah, they're going to be mad at Romney forever. But those who are open-minded about it or a little conflicted about it are going to be going, well, this is not fair to pile on. And a statement today like Romney used his religion as a crutch is going to help McAdams, because a lot of those people are LDS, members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, and they're not quite sure they can vote for a Democrat, but they sure don't like a president going after a Mormon who doesn't use his religion as a crutch based upon a lifetime of service in many ways. And so, you know, Trump did this once before, just before those caucuses in Utah, and I think it helped Cruz in the vote in those caucuses. So there could be broader ramifications in the continuing story. It's not over yet. And the extent to which religion is brought into this by the Trump side, the more it helps, I think, somebody like McAdams.
Tommy, I wanted to get your take on just, again, what Utahns are thinking about, not just the Romney decision, but the president himself. It's less than half, as you pointed out in an article recently, supported him in 2016. The Tribune's polling has found now that some 57%, I think it is, are actually with him. So his support in this state is rising, it seems.
Sure, and I think that you have to put that in context too with a Republican president. Any Republican president with an economy doing well like this would be doing really well in Utah.
It's not Trump; it's a Republican.
Exactly, yeah. much higher. And so that's you have to look at that in the full scope of things right now. That voters are pretty happy in Utah, but it's never been Trump country. This is not a place where Trump is has been doing well. Most polls have not shown him over 50% in Utah. As a Republican president, that's kind of shocking. How this is going to play, I think, is the most interesting thing we've covered in some ways. Here you have a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints who's a senator who votes to convict a president who is a Republican. And a Republican president who has irritated, I think, turned off a lot of members of the LDS Church over time because of the things he's said, some of his actions he's with women. So now we have this confluence of things that I just would like to see how this is going to play over time with members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
David Magley, what do you think about that? Anything more to say related to where he fits in Utah, Donald Trump and Mitt Romney?
Well, I think we found in the exit poll in 2016 that what happened was there were enough counterarguments about Clinton that it gave very active Mormons and strong Republicans enough cover that they could hold their noses and vote for Trump. Still, it was a plurality, not a majority in Utah. But strong Republicans, many of them very active members of the LDS Church, voted for Trump. And as Tommy said, I think it's been an ongoing kind of tug of war, partisanship versus religious principles. And the fact that Romney so distinctly brought his religion, which is the religion of the largest group in Utah, into the vote justification is going to provide some reasons for people to be examining themselves and their own views of Trump and how they're going to come out, whether it's partisanship or whether it's some sort of consideration that's different than most Republicans have had so far of his presidency is going to be a very interesting thing to watch.
He's 72 years old, Mitt Romney. What does this all mean for his political future? I think you've all talked a little bit about all of this. You're starting to hear, which, again, McKay Coppins, you mentioned he laughed out loud at the prospect of running for president again. But do we – and Tommy, you mentioned we're not sure he's even going to run again when he's up. But that will be 5 years, away. And perhaps Donald Trump and all of that vote will be – won't be as remembered so acutely, probably. So I'm just wondering what you're all thinking about his political future, if that has any effect.
I can jump in first here maybe quickly. I think he is unlikely to run again, and his political future depends a lot on what happens in this fall's election. If Trump is defeated, there will be a whole lot of second-guessing and a big debate in the Republican Party about its future. And I think he would then be able to play a large role. And it's interesting to question whether it's diminished now because of this vote or enhanced. It could go either way. It'll depend on the constituency. But he and other Republicans, I think, will then step forward with a view of the party much more like the Republican Party of George W. Bush than the party of Donald Trump. And that'll be a fight, and I think Romney would likely be important in that debate. If Trump wins, then I think Romney's voice is diminished, and I think he may decide it's just not worth the hassle to run for a second term. So it's going to be important whether he runs again or not, because I think he could play a role in reshaping the Republican Party if Trump loses.
It's Tommy. I would just jump in to say the Mueller report, by the way, did not come out a decade ago. That was last April. And there's a lot of time. Everything seems to move in like this 24-second cycle right now. By the time we get to Romney, whether he runs re-election or not, this is somewhat of a blip because there's going to be this thing and then the next thing and another thing and another thing after that.
McKay, what do you think?
Yeah, I will say that when Mitt Romney decided to run for Senate, it was in part, I'm told by a lot of people close to him, because he was alarmed by President Trump's ascent and the way he was governing and what it was doing to the Republican Party. All of these other things aside, Romney is very concerned about the direction his party is headed. And one of the things he wanted to do with this Senate seat was to try to illuminate an alternate path for the party rather than going down this path of Trumpian populism and nationalism and, in his view, I think demagoguery. And he's talked about the president's racism and misogyny. He wants to try to steer the party back away from that. And regardless of whether he decides to run again, I mean, this is so far away that I almost hesitate to speculate about that. But what I will say is that I do think he's going to keep trying over the next few years to do work that would at least show an option for an alternate GOP option besides just completely surrendering to Trumpism, regardless of whether Trump remains the leader of the party.
I want to play one more moment from Romney's speech. It's been interesting to hear how people are and read how people are reacting to all of this. Michael Luo of the New Yorker wrote about how Romney's career in public service has been characterized by something that you guys were talking about before, these kind of discordant narratives. But Luo wrote that Romney had sought to convey – here's – I'll quote from him – sought to convey to voters his deep sense of civic duty and his desire to make a contribution to his country. And while critics of both parties have held that he is a capricious politician lacking in core convictions, on Wednesday he may have finally resolved that conflict for posterity. Here's another moment from the speech.
I acknowledge that my verdict will not remove the president from office. The results of this Senate court – will in fact be appealed to a higher court, the judgment of the American people. Voters will make the final decision, just as the president's lawyers have implored. My vote will likely be in the minority in the Senate. But irrespective of these things, with my vote, I will tell my children and their children that I did my duty to the best of my ability, believing that my country expected it of me.
I guess finally, what do you guys think? What difference did this make?
Which I'm going to say, I think it changed the narrative in some ways. As we were talking before, you know, Trump isn't able to claim that all, you know, there was always just Democrats going against him in this case. It changed the tone a little bit. In this was in sanction, bipartisan against him, even if it was one senator. But it didn't, it has now a little asterisk on top of the asterisk for being impeachment that we have a Republican voting to convict a Republican.
This is McKay. I would also say, you know, stepping back a little bit, I think especially at this moment in politics, all of us have become so conditioned to cynically filter every political headline that we see. And, you know, it's very hard for us to believe that a politician would act against his own partisan self-interest and do something for any reason other than trying to advance his own career or hang on to power. And I think that, you know, Mitt Romney's vote may be remembered even just in discussions with people here in Washington, both Republicans and Democrats and people in the media. You know, a lot of them will say, I didn't think he had it in him. I didn't think that this was going to happen. And it is so rare for a politician from either party to kind of break with their party so decisively when it doesn't help them. And so, you know, for me at least, I will say as a reporter who is pretty cynical about politics, I will admit that, it was a nice moment to remember that these political leaders can still surprise us and we can and should hold them to higher standards than they're being held to now.
David McElby, final word.
Academics can be pretty jaded as well, and I got an email yesterday from a colleague not in Utah, knows I'm from Utah, and wanted me to know that he had watched the speech and observed the vote and that he was moved by it, moved in the sense that it gave him some sense of hope that we can find a way to get beyond the sort of tribalism and articulate things in a way that Romney did, and then vote his conscience. I was struck by this one email, and I think it speaks to the broader sense of at least some that say, aha, maybe there is some hope for our institutions to find ways to foster more honest votes than just purely partisan votes.
Dave McElby, Professor Emeritus at Brigham Young University. Professor, thanks for joining us.
You're welcome. It's been a treat.
Thomas Burr, Washington Bureau Chief of the Salt Lake Tribune, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks, Doug.
And McKay Coppin, staff writer for The Atlantic, joined us from the NPR studios in Washington, D.C. McKay, thanks to you as well.
Thank you.
We'll take another break and come back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West.
KUER's Community Calendar has hundreds of events listed for you to discover all across Utah. Whether you're looking to make friends, discover art exhibits, learn a new skill, or take the family out for the weekend, you're sure to find an activity that you'll enjoy. Plus, you can share your own events, too. Just fill out the form. It's all on our website, KUER.org. Just click on Community Calendar under the Events tab.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Robert Bolt's play and film A Man for All Seasons has been coming up a lot this week. It tells the story of Sir Thomas More, Lord Chancellor of England under King Henry VIII, who refused to swear allegiance to the king as the head of the Church of England. And a lot of people are seeing a relationship between the Thomas More in Bolt's play and Mitt Romney. Stephen Colbert brought it up on his show this week. And you have to admit, there are some striking similarities. Both men broke step with their colleagues and their leader to follow their own conscience. In Bolt's play, More says, when statesmen forsake their own private conscience for the sake of their own public duties, they lead their country by a short route to chaos. We're going to end today's conversation about Senator Romney's impeachment vote by looking back at Bolt's 1966 play. We're joined by the University of Utah professor of English, Mark Matheson. He's joining us by phone. And Professor, welcome. Thanks very much for being with us.
Doug, it's great to be with you again. Thank you.
I want to ask you, what do you make of this connection that people are making? I'm starting to see it all a lot. I mean, clearly the themes are connecting, right?
Well, I think they really are. And, you know, these are two very notable instances of someone in the give and take of the political world who comes to a point where he stands up for principle to his own political cost, and very likely, and in Moore's case, of course, at the cost of his life.
So talk a little bit about, if you would, Robert Bolt, what he was thinking about as he crafted this play. One of the things you've mentioned that he was quite interested in, that conflict between, as you've put it, conformity and conscience.
I think very much so. And Bolt himself was not a religious man or writer, but he was very interested in the power of conscience and very interested in conflicts between conscience and conformity, between individual conscience and group identity. And as he talked about A Man for All Seasons, his play, he noted that what really fascinated him about Moore's story is that Moore reached a point at the end of a very long and tremendously successful political career where he had to stand on principle and on his conscience, and he knew that the cost of that could be dire, as it turned out to be.
It's interesting. Talk a little bit about the Thomas Moore that Bolt writes about. He was a commoner. So he has this rise to power, and
yes,
and the pragmatism was important in that.
Oh, I think very much so. And you know, Henry VIII needed people like Thomas Moore. Thomas Moore was a commoner. He had important patrons. It turned out that he was simply brilliant as a lawyer and as a writer. And his talent was spotted, and he went to work for Henry VIII directly in 1518. And you know, he understood the risks of that, but you know, he was so successful politically that, you know, I think that does attest to, you know, his pragmatic understanding that in ordinary circumstances there's a great deal of give and take in politics, and one makes some compromises, and as Bolt said, as he was talking about the play, Moore got to the point where he could not compromise any further.
I wanted to ask you about a moment from the play and film. We'll play a moment here.
Okay.
Because it gets to this question of how swearing an oath, as Senator Romney said this week, directly connects you to who you are and your identity. Here's a moment from A Man for All Seasons.
Father, God more regards the thoughts of the heart than the words of the mouth, or so you've always told me.
Yes.
Then say the words of the oath, and in your heart think otherwise.
What is an oath, then, but words we say to God? Listen, Meg, when a man takes an oath, he's holding his own self in his own hands, like water. And if he opens his fingers then, he needn't hope to find himself again. Some men aren't capable of this, but I'd be loath to think your father one of them.
Professor, say something about that, if you would, the idea of
an
oath.
I think that we can really see Bolt in you know, this moment of the play, focusing in, you know, very intently and earnestly on the issue of one's oath and its connection to one's identity. And very, very interesting that you know, religious discourse and religious commitments, you know, very much played a role in Thomas More's principled stand against Henry VIII. And as we know from Senator Romney's speech, he also appealed to his religious convictions and said that this was an event of such magnitude that you know, those convictions were activated. And that's very much the way it was with More, too. He, of course, did not want to acknowledge or take the oath of supremacy that Henry VIII was the head of the church in England, because as a loyal Roman Catholic, More always believed that the Pope in Rome was the head of the church in England. And interestingly, you know, so cautious and pragmatic More was, he didn't actually say that he wouldn't take the oath, nor did he criticize Henry VIII publicly for claiming to be the supreme head of the church in England. He wasn't executed for what he said. He was executed for what he would not say.
That's Mark Matheson, University of Utah professor of English, joined us by phone this morning. Professor, thank you very much.
Thanks so much, Doug.
Radio West is a production of KUER. Our intern is Natu Tway. The show produced by Benjamin Bombard, Tim Slover, and Alia Vallarta. Christy Miners is our executive producer. I'm Doug Fabrizio.